Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, July 21st. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Planning Operations Section Chief Leif Matheson briefs public on ongoing response to the Orleans Complex wildfire, and Eureka Police traffic bicycle stops soar. So stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Redwood Community Radio, KMUD, has just suffered a devastating blow with the loss of roughly 25% of our annual operating budget due to the rescission's bill elimination of federal funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This isn't just about the numbers on a spreadsheet, this is about the soul of our rural North Coast community and the vital connections that keep us together, informed, and safe. Without federal CPB funding, we are facing an existential threat. Unlike urban public radio stations with access to corporate sponsors and large university budgets, rural stations like KMUD depend on a combination of federal support, listener contributions, underwriting, fundraising events, and grants. KMUD is more than just a radio station, it's who we are. In an age of social media echo chambers and corporate media consolidation, community radio represents something increasingly rare: authentic local connection. We are not owned by a distant corporation or beholden to advertisers in other states. We are accountable to you, our neighbors, because we are you. Nonprofits and community groups use KMUD airtime to mobilize volunteers, announce meetings, and share resources. This is community in action. Neighbors helping neighbors build the community we all want to live in. If you are able to support KMUD, you can visit kmud.org under the Donate tab. Planning Operations Section Chief Leif Matheson gives an update on the Orleans Complex from the Klamath National Forest Facebook news release on today's overview of the fire status and plans for today going forward.
I'm going to give you an operational update on our plan for the day. I'm going to start talking here in Division Alpha on the large slop over on the east side of the river. Crews continue to try and pick this piece of fire up direct. There's some challenges in there. It's very steep. They're getting some rollout at night. Crews are going back in there today. They've had some successes with aviation support. We have a influx of crews that came in yesterday. So the plan is to continue working that piece of line from Salmon River Road up towards Yellow Jacket Ridge. Like I said, there are some challenges in there. It's pretty steep. They've had some rollout. We had some injuries in there the other day, so we're going in there cautiously, but still trying to work that piece direct. Moving over in here, what is now Division Delta, the fire has moved across to Murderer's Gulch, so they were looking at that yesterday. There's a little bit of a spot fire in it, so they're beginning to cut lines on the ridge between China Gulch and Dead Horse Gulch. There's a ridgeline in here. They're moving some equipment around over there right now, and then the plan is to try to push that ridgeline down and get it back to the Sawyer's Bar Road. They had some crews start that work last night, and they cut till about 2 in the morning, and it got a little bit too steep at night to pick through there, so they're going to get in there and assess it during the daylight. Moving down Sawyer's Bar Road, fire has hit Sawyer's Bar Road in several places. We have engines along that road. We have had a few instances where we've had some rollout that has crossed the road, but they've been able to pick up those slop overs. So for the most part, we're feeling pretty good about holding Sawyer's Bar Road back down to the forks of the Salmon. As we move around over here to McNeil, this piece of line that was our primary line, the ridge line, right on the edge of the Red Salmon. So we talked yesterday, that had some slop overs in there. Crews were able to assess those slop overs yesterday. We had a piece of equipment that was able, a dozer that was on night shift last night, that was able to open up that 04 road. There was a bunch of rocks and trees that had come over it. So crews are going to be able to gain access to the top of this slop over today, and the plan is to assess it. One of the challenges with that slop over is that the spots are in a snag patch, so some pretty big snags that the crews can't necessarily get underneath. They're going to assess what they can and look at it. While the crews are doing that, we've had resources up Know Nothing Drainage. There's some structures in there, and so they're assessing those structures, evaluating what we can do, moving in, either doing prep around the structure, and if there's a water source and it makes sense, putting in sprinkler systems.
On the west side of the Salmon River, fire pushed through McNeil Creek drainage and through spots across Handline into the adjacent Know Nothing Creek drainage, prompting the Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office to issue evacuation order for zones SIS-1802, the Upper Nordheimer, and S-1903, Upper Know Nothing Creek.
We're also starting to work on this hoteling ridge. That's got some previous fire line on it, so we're moving some equipment around, and crews are starting to scout out this hoteling ridge, so we have some options if they're not able to pick up this fire out of McNeil here. Moving around to the top of Division Hotel, the fire continues to back upslope towards DP-60. That's moving up there in a low-intensity, moderate fashion, so they're having no control challenges there. Things are looking good. They continue to plumb up towards Orleans Mountain Lookout just to have that ready to receive fire as this if this kind of fills in towards the line. Right here at DP-70, similar thing. The fire has made it up to DP-70. They put some control line down to try to wrap that fire back into Butler Creek. They've been looking down Butler with personnel, folks getting down there as far as they can and using the drones to IR it. Butler Creek is holding really well, so they're pretty confident that's looking good.
To the north, a spot fire was detected across the Salmon River near Trip Point. Aircraft responded quickly, laying down a line of retardant to impede any northern spread. Firefighters were ferried across the river to contain it.
As we move around here into X-ray, and the Butler structures, those have been looking great for the last several days, so no challenges there. We did have a spot fire over the river yesterday afternoon about 3 o'clock. Those crews were able to get aviation on that immediately. We had the boat crews sitting in Division Alpha. We moved the boat crews down. They got four crews across the river. Those four hotshot crews cut line around that spot fire last night. They got it lined. First thing this morning before briefing, as soon as daylight came up, they were back in there today to mop that up. So good success there. I think that's just an indication that we still can't walk away from this. We're still got people on the road system there. We still have the high potential for rollout, but a really good successful catch on that spot fire yesterday.
The Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office expanded its evacuation orders on July 20th to include zones SIS-1802 and SIS-1903. The following zones to be under evacuation orders are FRK-1709, Forks of Salmon, SIS-1703, SIS-1704. The locations for that is Butler Creek, Lewis Creek, Bloomer Mine Residence, and Nordheimer Campground. The next location is SIS-1707-A, SIS-1707-B, SIS-1708, SIS-1710, SIS-1803-A, SIS-1804, SIS-1805, and SIS-1808. The Siskiyou County of Emergency Services has established a dedicated phone number to assist people with their evacuation needs. The number is 530-340-3539. Again, that is 530-340-3539. The following zones are under an evacuation warning: SAW-1713, SIS-1705, SIS-1712, SIS-1803-B, SIS-1811, SIS-1906, and SIS-1907. Residents are advised to be prepared to evacuate if conditions become more threatening. The latest evacuation information can be found at protect.genesys.com. That's protect.genasys.com. Salmon River Road between Butler Flat and Nordheimer Campground remains closed as rocks and burning debris continue to fall into the roadway. The Six Rivers and Klamath National Forest issued a joint closure order on July 16th within the vicinity of the Butler Fire. The closures include Nordheimer and Oak Bottom Campgrounds. The Pacific Crest Trail remains outside of the closure area, but hikers are advised to exercise caution. A marine layer today has ushered in some of the lowest temperatures and highest humidity readings since the Butler fire began. Temperatures will be in the low 80s with humidity at 55% along ridge tops, and winds will remain out of the northwest, gusting up to 20 miles an hour. KMUD will continue to update as we get more information. To stay prepared, you can visit kmud.org under the Fire Resources tab. A new policing approach in Eureka includes a significant rise in traffic stops as described to the City Council at its most recent meeting, Daniel Mintz reports.
The Eureka Police Department's most recent update shows proactive policing in action with dramatic increases in officer-initiated activity, traffic stops, and pedestrian and bicycle stops. As detailed by Eureka Police Chief Brian Stevens during the July 15th City Council meeting, the proactive approach is believed to be leading to fewer calls for emergency and general responses. Stevens summarized statistics from April through June of this year compared to the same time period last year. 911 calls and non-emergency calls are each down by 10%. Calls for various types of service are down by 6%. A recent shift in the department's policing style is reflected in another set of numbers, those on officer-initiated contacts and stops. Describing them as the big numbers, Stevens summarized them, as well as arrest numbers.
With some change this year, we've seen a real increase in the officer-initiated activity. It's up 95% for this quarter alone. Our traffic stops are up 292%. We really have made a focus on traffic stops being important as they play a vital role not only in our traffic enforcement side of the house, but they also lead to multiple other types of investigations for our patrol officers to dive deep into because they're stopping people and finding different things on those stops. So we're seeing an increase in our traffic stops, and our bike pet stops are up 833% as well. So our total cases is only up 2% for compared to this time last year. Our felony arrests are up 2%, and our misdemeanor arrests are down 9%.
Regarding traffic incidents, collisions dropped by 14%, but criminal collisions, such as hit and runs, increased by 35%, and DUI arrests increased by 69%. 411 traffic citations were written, an increase of 136%. The addition of an Old Town patrol officer is linked with increases in mental health calls for service and 5150 holds. They rose from 347 to 421 and 18 to 36, respectively. A collaboration between the department and the Crisis Alternative Response Eureka, or CARE program, was discussed in this exchange between Mayor Kim Burgell and Stevens.
So you were talking about this partnership with CARE, and I know that CARE is now starting or started not long ago to do solo calls without a police officer with them. Are you finding that that is becoming more and more often? Is there an increase in that? And is that freeing up the department more for other things?
Yeah, for sure. CARE has been a complete asset to the department in many ways, starting off with the fact that they can relieve us earlier on calls. So we're not spending two officers on a call for a longer period of time trying to resolve something we may not have the resolution for. Secondly, officers know that there are particular folks who have outlets for the issues they're having. They have resources out there, and they'll have CARE come with them. They'll make that phone call as soon as they hear what they're being dispatched to and who they're being dispatched to. And then just today, I saw a call that got held for CARE. It was somebody in our lobby talking nonsensically. It was not a danger to no one. There was no need for an officer to go out there. They dispatched CARE directly to that, and they showed up at our office and took the lady away to get her some help. So, I believe it's becoming more routine, and we're seeing more comfort. Everybody's become more comfortable with the process. However, we do not take anything for granted, and if there's any safety issues at all, we make sure that there's a dual response for those types of calls.
I'm glad to hear that, because that is something that the community has talked about, you know, a lot about. You know, why do you have to have an officer out there? Why can't it just be, you know, this kind of thing? So I really appreciate our city going to bat and making that happen and working together to make that a reality.
Commenting on the mental health responses, Councilmember Scott Bauer said the city, quote, seems like we're getting people help through the Old Town officer and the CARE program. Councilmember Renee Contreras Deloche linked the proactive approach with crime prevention and said residents are in support of it.
I wasn't expecting such really dramatic numbers, but I really appreciate it. I really just same thing, kind of comment. Thanks, Chief. Thank you. Also to our commanders and everybody else that's working on this. I think obviously crime prevention and, you know, preventing something worse from happening by watching, you know, traffic and stuff like that is obviously better, deterring people or rerouting, you know, mental health issues to people who are mental health providers and stuff like that. I really appreciate all the effort that you guys are constantly engaged in, and it's making a difference. I see people talking about it a lot online, and so I wanted to commend you guys for your social media presence too, and constantly making people aware of the fact that you guys are out there and watching them on patrol. I think that's making a really big difference. I haven't heard anybody complain about it, so I think surprisingly, and I've heard people joke about being pulled over and said once was enough, but I haven't heard anybody complain about the fact that you guys are doing more enforcement, because I think everyone's felt like those streets, everything's moving way too fast. We've had way too many accidents and everybody's been trying to figure it out.
Also at the meeting, a Gulch Greenway ordinance was approved. The ordinance designates a Gulch Greenway overlay area, described as a screening tool triggering site-specific evaluation when development is proposed. Within the zone are management areas that apply to portions of parcels within 50 feet of greenway riparian areas and 100 feet from wetlands. The new rules won't apply to existing home footprints and existing outdoor improvements. New permitting will apply to various activities, including removal of large native trees, sizable grading and vegetation removal, and installation of fencing. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In state news, California and other states sue to stop rule undermining health coverage under Medicaid and Affordable Health Care Act, KPFA's Scott Baba reports.
A new lawsuit led by the Attorney Generals of California, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, and backed by over a dozen other states, is challenging a final rule issued by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. State officials argue the rule unlawfully amends Affordable Care Act marketplace requirements in ways that would increase costs, reduce coverage, and harm state-administered insurance programs. Among the changes, the rule shortens open enrollment periods, adds new verification burdens, and imposes automatic charges on consumers who qualify for $0 premiums. It also excludes gender-affirming care from essential health benefits under the ACA, shifting related costs to the states and threatening access to care for vulnerable populations. California Attorney General Rob Bonta said the rule change would be disastrous for millions of Americans.
This so-called final rule would strip health insurance from nearly 2 million Americans. Strip health insurance from nearly 2 million Americans by the Trump administration's own estimates. Today's lawsuit is about protecting our residents from losing the affordable coverage they rely on, and defending the Affordable Care Act, a cornerstone of our healthcare system for the last 15 years.
Bonta said the rule is arbitrary, capricious, and contrary to law, and violates the Administrative Procedures Act in a number of ways.
It makes sweeping changes, unsupported by evidence. It fails to consider reasonable alternatives. It contradicts the ACA's guaranteed issue requirement, and it overrides state flexibility without legal basis. We're asking the court to block the challenged portions of this rule before they cause irreparable harm.
New Jersey Attorney General Matthew Plotkin said that far from reducing waste, fraud, and abuse as the Trump administration has claimed it would, the rule change would drive up Medicaid spending, emergency care costs, and uncompensated care expenses for states. Plotkin said the rule seemed designed to try and reverse and undermine progress made in expanding access to affordable health insurance through the ACA marketplaces.
Even the people who will now meet the burdens put on them to get health care under the ACA exchange, as we show in the complaint, will likely be those who most direly need health care. A lot of the people who will fall out of the exchanges will be younger and disproportionately healthier, which was part of the entire purpose of the Affordable Care Act, which was to make sure that healthcare is more accessible and cheaper for every American.
Plotkin said that while it is the president's prerogative to choose how to enforce laws, he must still do so in accordance with existing laws.
I have said many times since January 20th, I don't take issue with the president's decision and Congress's decision to lawfully exercise their authority. I might not agree with it, but my job is to stand up when the law is being broken and the people of my state are being hurt. That is exactly what is happening here. The president does not, and his administration do not, have the right to, with the stroke of a pen, undermine a legal structure that was put in place by Congress specifically for the purpose of making healthcare more accessible and more affordable for every American.
The coalition is seeking a court order to block the rule before it takes effect on August 25th. I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In national news, Hague group of nations call for sanctions to hold Israel accountable for genocide crisis. KPFA Anasuya Todakat reports.
In a new and multilateral effort to address the Israel-Gaza conflict, the eight member countries in the Hague Group held an emergency conference of states on Tuesday to put forward sanctions and measures to hold Israel accountable for what they call a regime of occupational exclusion. Rosa Yolanda Villavicencio, the acting foreign minister of Colombia, shared her support for Palestine during the conference. Her remarks were interpreted through a translator.
Colombia has stated unambiguously that what happens in Gaza is a genocide. Today, from Bogota, we reiterate Palestine is not alone. This meeting may be the beginning of a joint action, firm and transformative.
The meeting was jointly convened by the governments of Colombia and South Africa. It brought together more than 30 nations, including countries like China, Spain, Brazil, Norway, Portugal, and others. The conference was also joined by UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese, who was issued a sanction by the US last week over her recent report scrutinizing human rights abuses in Palestine.
I fear what the region and its institutions have come to symbolize to many, a sodality of states preaching international law, yet guided more by colonial mindset than principle, acting as vassals to the US empire, even if as it drags us from war to war, misery to misery, and when it comes to Palestine, from silence to complicity, from apartheid to genocide.
On Wednesday, as the conference concluded, the group released a joint statement outlining six key measures. These included halting the provision and transfer of arms, military fuel, and dual-use items to Israel, and preventing the transit, docking, or servicing of vessels that may carry such materials. The statement also called for an urgent review of public contracts to end support for Israel's occupation and for robust investigations and prosecutions, both nationally and internationally, to ensure accountability under international law. Additionally, it urged support for universal jurisdiction mandates to help deliver justice for victims. Dr. Thayer Ahmed, who was previously an ER physician in Khan Yunus in the Gaza Strip, shared a testimony during the conference on the ongoing situation of Gaza.
Imagine if your child was one of the 10 children that was killed queuing for water in Deir al-Balah a few days ago. Would you accept the excuse that it was a technical error? Would you allow the world to move on without acknowledging the injustice that was inflicted on your child?
The Israeli strike that happened on Sunday at a Gaza water station killed 10 people, including 6 children. According to the Israeli Defense Forces, the strike was a technical error that was originally targeting an Islamic Jihadi terrorist. The Minister of the State of Palestine, Riyad Ech Manzoor, also shared his message on how important this conference was.
What we need is not reaffirmation of principles. What we need is implementation. We need action. This conference, the Madrid conference, and others that will follow are ushering the beginning of a new atmosphere or a new stage in the struggle of the Palestinian people by implementing international law and the will of the international community reflected in the historic advisory opinion of the ICJ and the resolutions of the Security Council and in the General Assembly.
The Madrid Conference was an earlier multilateral effort held in Spain in May as an effort by a group of European and Arab nations to put pressure on the Israeli government to stop its military offensive in Gaza. The website DropSite News received an official statement from the U.S. State Department where they strongly opposed the Hague Group's meeting in Colombia. For KPFA News, I am Anasuya Torekart.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Dena'ina people have lived on Alaska's Kenai Peninsula for thousands of years. Their indigenous language is not spoken as widely as it once was. That's why the Kenaitse Indian tribe is launching an interactive language learning software to help people learn Dena'ina words and phrases. As KDLL's Hunter Morrison reports, app developers say the language tool is key to preserving the health of the indigenous community.
Okay, today is June 4th, 2025. This is the Verb Stem Dictionary, page 553.
In a small recording studio at the tribe's administrative office in Kenai, language transcriptionist Andrea Ivanhoff runs through the book's Dena'ina phrases. She's seated across from her grandmother and longtime Dena'ina language speaker, Helen McLean.
This one's a long one. I don't know. Chduts enes denralten. Chduts enes denralten. Chduts enes denralten. Overflow ice that formed into a bluff.
They're recording content for CAN 8, Kenaitse's new language learning computer application. It's part of the tribe's cultural revitalization efforts.
For adult learners, there's no access point to learn Dena'ina.
That's Joel Isaac, Kenaitse Director of Language and Cultural Preservation. He's also the language app's project manager.
And so we're hoping that this application will help foster a love and interest and dedication to learning Dena'ina language.
The Kenaitse application, which is still in its beta testing phase, covers everything from basic Dena'ina vocabulary to full sentences. The 20-unit program is loaded with interactive games, spelling tests, and more. 8 Dena'ina people developed the app, including Helen McLean. McLean grew up speaking Dena'ina and says her language is part of her identity.
My grandma and grandpa, they tell me, you better not lose our words. You guys have to keep it.
Dena'ina people, like Isaac, say preserving the language is important because much of their culture has been lost through the deliberate suppression of Alaska Native traditions and customs.
This is like core to our identity, and it's also critical for our health and like who we are as people. So it helps heal the community by bringing health back to this place that we all call home.
In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Officials and students at California Indian Nations College joined tribal leaders and lawmakers Friday in Palm Springs to celebrate a $10 million state investment in the school and its efforts for it to become the only federally accredited tribal college in the state. Celeste Townsend, president and CEO of the college, says tribal colleges and universities uplift their communities, honor cultural knowledge, and foster student success.
For generations, the absence of a tribal college in California meant our students were left without a place that truly honored who they are. But today, with SINC's accreditation and expanding presence, that reality is changing. Now, Native and non-Native students have a place to pursue their academic goals in a space that is respectful and rooted in cultural values that sustain our First Peoples.
California Indian Nations College is a two-year college located in Palm Desert. Native American lawmaker James Ramos advocated for the state funding. President Trump is threatening to hold up a stadium deal for the Washington football team over its name, the Associated Press reports. Trump posted on his social media site Sunday saying he wants the NFL team to restore its former R-word team name. He also wants the professional Cleveland baseball team to restore its former name. Native groups, including the National Congress of American Indians, have long advocated for the end of the use of Indian mascots and logos in sports. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That that's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Scott Baba, Anasuya Todakat, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on kmud.org, and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscast for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@knud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.